Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The countryside of Mongolia displays extensive diversity ranging from the arid Gobi regions to the glacial Kinye Mountains. Now, later this evening, Scott Kenner, who is head of the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at the School of Mines and Technology, will discuss his research on the rivers and mountains of Mongolia in a STEAM Cafe presentation at 6 p.m. at Hay Camp Brewing in Rapid City. Dr. Kenner joins us now from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital Studio in SDPB's Rapid City Studio with a preview. Hey, welcome back to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so you went to Mongolia as a Fulbright scholar. Tell people a little bit about the Fulbright program to get us started, please.
I'll tell you, it's the greatest thing going. It was a tremendous opportunity. I'd been thinking about back a little bit in this opportunity, and I went the year before and visited some previous students, and they had just started a program in water resources among three schools, integrated water resources, and what a great fit. We wrote a white paper. I came back and put in a proposal, and it got funded, and off I went for the year 2012-2013 to teach and do research.
All right, so some of your first impressions about Mongolia when you got there, because it's one of those countries that most people don't know a whole lot about.
Yes. Well, I was working at the Mongolia University of Science and Technology. That's their big science and technology. That's their big engineering school. And half of the population lives in Ulaanbaatar, so there's a lot of people, a lot of traffic, and I was a little nervous at the start and didn't speak Mongolian, and not a lot of them speak English, so nothing really happened for about a month until we kind of developed a relationship with a few correct people, and all of a sudden, I did four research projects, taught two courses and two workshops over the year, and it was just a fantastic experience.
Tell me what some of the challenges from an infrastructure, water resources point of view there are in Mongolia at the time that you were there.
Yeah, I'll share some of this this evening, but they really grasped onto the technology of what I taught with the use of computer models and stuff, and I think they're growing in that area. But in 1992, and right in there, is when Russia had controlled the country and just kind of up and left. So Mongolia is developing its own democratic style of government, trying to develop resources and manage utilities, and then they have these very severe winter events called a zud, and the population outside of the urban areas are nomadic herdsmen, and they have lost a lot of livestock during, I think, the late 80s, early 90s, and a lot of those herders moved into the urban center. And now they have what they call a gare district around the urban complex, where 60% of the people do not have water, sewer, power, and it really causes a lot of stress on the system and economics of this country.
And so those people in that gare district are largely displaced.
Yeah,
herders? Is that
looking for work? Yes,
okay, sure.
Looking for a way to make a living.
Tell me a little bit. I want to get into more of sort of what you did, but I'm really interested in what you said about that first month. Nothing really happened for a month. All right, so take me into the month, because that can be a disheartening time. It can be frustrating. Let's sit in that month when you're trying to figure out, why am I here?
Yes. They had assigned a young graduate student, senior, kind of in between, to help me out. His name was Ayerzan, Ayer is for short. Turned out he's now one of my best friends. But I was down in a basement in a small room at a very small desk. I'm not a small guy. And it was kind of cold and damp. And I was supposed to teach a course. We had prepared a bit of this ahead of time. But when I got there, you know, they didn't have the course on their registrar, and had to work with someone to get that there. And the first class is going to happen. And they had around 25 or 30 students in this Integrated Water Resources Master's degree, which I was teaching to that cohort. And four students showed up to the class. And I was a little disappointed. And we had talked and had met twice. And then I went up and talked with the person that was sort of in charge of IWRM, is what we call it for short. And I learned that, well, the NAM, National University of Mongolia, kind of the science school there in Ulaanbaatar, didn't start classes until about 4 weeks later. And a lot of the students in the program are at that school. And so we got a hold of Sonen Hishig. She's a professor at NAM, and she was out in the field. So we finally got organized, and I told the first few students that were coming, well, we're just going to wait till they get in session, and then we'll all meet together. And I ended up with 18 students in the classroom, and I could sense a little bit of, you know, hesitation on how much interaction they wanted to get involved with, not only the students, but the faculty there. Mm-hmm. But with a persistent, you know, offering of services, information, working with the students, it just evolved. I worked with Sonen Hishig and four graduate students on a really neat research project for environmental low flows. In the class, there were probably four or five that could speak pretty good English. Others, what we might refer to as broken. So we'd go through a little discussion and stuff, and then I'd say, okay, make sure everybody understands. So they would talk in Mongolian, and it really worked out really well.
In a program like this, tell me what you bring back for your own knowledge. What did you learn that you think, you know, applies to your work at the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology, or applies to infrastructure and water usage in South Dakota?
Well, it's really interesting that in the countryside, which is what would be referred to outside the urban environment, there are no fences in Mongolia. And there isn't formal land ownership. There's just an organized approach to nomadic lifestyle that certain families and groups graze certain regions and areas. And the roads, two-track dirt roads and stuff, go everywhere or anywhere. You can really get lost easy. And that's different than in the United States. You know, we're all about land ownership and stuff. So the way the people work together and live in off the land is quite amazing. And they're just a very, I don't know what the right word is, hardy, very accomplished people in the countryside. And so when I come back here, I look at how developed we are, and that's where our research has led us. We're comparing nine rivers in the United States with nine rivers in Mongolia, and what are the differences? We're hypothesizing that in similar ecoregions, similar local environments, they should be the same. Well, are they? What are the influences of climate? What are the influences of human use within the watershed and the development? And so we're trying to learn more about rivers by contrasting these two areas in the ecoregion of what's called mountain steppe ecoregions.
Wow, that's fascinating. All right, so we look at the recent flooding in South Dakota as well. What stands out to you about the infrastructure here at home? What were some of your initial thoughts when you saw us, you know, have the challenges in September that really mirror the challenges that we had in March, and we're looking at dams and all kinds of things happening?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It might bring to someone's thoughts this climate change issue or whatnot. I like to think of it as climate variability. In other words, there's a good bit of documentation out there that our extremes are getting more extreme. So our droughts will be more extreme. And when we're wet, our flood events might be more extreme. And even before it's starting to change, we developed in a lot of areas that, wow, this is a floodplain. What happens in a floodplain? Well, every so often it floods, and it actually recharges. The agricultural land we have is fertile because it gets recharged with the organics and sediments. Now, when we start to control that or expect it not to happen, that's really hard to control. So we kind of overlap between that extreme event and our lifestyle and our living, not only in urban environments, but in agriculture environments. Mm-hmm. And when those big storms happen, we're going to have issues.
Scott Kenner is head of the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology. And his STEAM Cafe talk presentation is 6 p.m. at Hay Camp Brewing in Rapid City. That's local time. And take a look at his time in Mongolia. Hey, Dr. Kenner, thanks so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you.